This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Howdy, we're coming to you live for the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. That's where we hang out every single day. Tiki and Tierney. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So the sun is shining, and it has been shining on Augusta National all day. Right now, -3 is the score to beat with three golfers in the clubhouse. Adam Scott, two other, John Rahm, posting 69. Tiger's a shot back. Mickelson's playing well. Ricky Fowler's playing pretty well. Jordan Spieth a little bit sloppy. I know Jason Day's been battling a bad back. All sorts of great storylines as we really start the golf season in earnest with the beginning of the Masters. And Jason Sobel's down there, the Action Network senior golf writer. He's with us here on Tiki and Tierney. Jason, how are you today?
I'm good, Brandon. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. I'm doing absolutely awesome. My in-laws were out there Tuesday for the practice round. It was raining a lot, obviously sunny today conditions-wise. Very receptive, fairly easy, because I know we got some rain. How's the grounds now in terms of difficulty?
Yeah, really not as soft as I think we figured it would be 2 days ago. It rained a lot overnight on Monday and through Tuesday, and I think that a lot of people – a lot of the players assume that it would be very soft out there, and it really isn't. It's playing about the way we would assume an Augusta National would play during Masters Week. Like you mentioned, 3-under, the best score so far today. That's a bit higher than we usually see. We usually see something in the 67, 68 range, so obviously there's still players out there, but looks like that's going to be about the best score right around there. So, playing tough today.
All right. Last year the winning score was 15, and I don't think they were too thrilled with that, so you trick it up a little bit. Not that you can control the weather, but they made a few revisions on that. Didn't they stretch a hole out 44 yards? What did they do to change it a little bit? They did something, right?
Yeah, the fifth hole has been stretched out from, I believe, 455 to 495 or so.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that hole is playing longer. The green's a little bit more receptive. They've fixed that a little bit too. So I haven't seen the scoring average on that hole today. That's probably playing a little bit tougher than it did last year, but not a major impact at all.
Okay. I'm watching the highlights here, and even in real time when I got into the studio, I had it on first thing. I couldn't wait to get out of the car so I could get the golf channel, on Sirius off my radio and then get to my studio to watch the golf. It's four straight days. That's all I'm going to do, basically. And Jason, it's really hard to watch Jason Day. How is he still playing? He looked as if he couldn't even bend over. He looks like a 60-year-old, man with a bad back. He's physically not right. Is it dangerous to keep playing here?
I think if it was any other week, Jason Day would be in a physio trailer right now getting himself worked on and out of the tournament. But I think just because it's the Masters, he's going to keep giving it a shot. So we've seen him with back problems forever. I mean, he started having back problems when he was 14, 15 years old. In fact, in the Chicago Tribune today, Teddy Greenstein, a buddy of mine, is writing a piece about the tree, the famous oak tree behind the clubhouse, and he happened to capture a moment innocently between Michael Campbell, the former U.S. Open champion, and Jason Day. And Campbell said, "Hey, you look good." And Day says, "Well, I'm 31, but I feel like I'm 50. And that was really foreshadowing what we're seeing today, because he looks like he's 50 to the rest of us today.
Yeah, and what a shame, too, because, there was about a 2.5-3 year window where he combined power and precision and touch and creativity and presence and flair. A couple of years, Jason Day was the whole package. He was a superstar.
He was. And whether it was something that he did with his swing, he swings obviously so hard at the ball, and whether that's contributed to his back injuries or whether it's just something that he was always going to have, hereditary or whatever, I don't know. So it's hard to criticize him for anything. And, I don't think too often, and this probably happens in all sports, Brandon, but especially in golf. We saw it with Tiger. Tiger went through all these back injuries, and people almost made it sound like it was his fault. Like somehow he wanted to be injured, and he wasn't treating himself right or something like that. Jason Day, We see him gutting it out there, and people are kind of like rolling their eyes like, oh, man, there goes Jason Day. He's limping again. I love the fact that at the biggest tournament of the year, he's obviously in pain, and yet he's gutting it out, and he's trying to play golf. I think that's pretty admirable.
It is admirable.
Doing that.
That's the word I was going to use, too. Now, just to clarify, we're talking to Jason Sobel, the Action Network senior golf writer who's with us here on Tiki and Tierney. When you say some of the eyes are rolling, do you mean players? Do you mean the patrons?
No.
Whose eyes are rolling?
No. Patrons, I'm sitting here looking at Twitter and
gotcha.
People are going on Twitter. Oh, wow, Jason Day again. Here we go. He's hurt again.
Gotcha.
Yes, this is a lingering, recurring injury, and he's had to deal with it for a long time.
That's what I thought you meant. Just wanted to make sure we were on the same page.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to Tiger. I know you do a lot of interviews, and let's face it, you know, golf, people who do what I do for a living, you either know golf or you don't. So you get hit with the questions which must bore you to death. Can Tiger Woods really win a major? Of course he can. He's hitting the crap out of the ball. He's in great shape. He's got depth. I know the putter's a little icy, but that gets going. He's going to win again. We all know that. So my question is more sophisticated, and I can't wait to hear your answer.
Please.
I think you'll like this question, too. It's a guess on your part, but I'm really curious where you go. The best part about Tiger getting hurt and being humanized, you know, when he was picked up by the police, just going through the public ringer, he's come back with a deep appreciation for people. He looks you in the eye more. He's more engaging with fans. It's Tiger Woods seems like he's having fun, and that is awesome to see. He's no longer robotic. But here's my question, Jason: if he ever starts to dominate again, and I believe that he could, does he turn back into Robot Tiger, or is this the Tiger that's here to stay, the affable, fun, enjoyable Tiger?
I think between the ropes, he becomes kind of Robot Tiger. In fact, Justin Thomas mentioned they played a practice round earlier this week, and he was asked, you know, what did you learn from Tiger? He said, Tiger was kind of tight-lipped out there. He didn't want to help me too much. So I think between the ropes, he becomes that robot once again. But outside of the ropes, outside of golf, I think that this new Tiger is sort of here to stay. There are a few examples. When he came back in the Bahamas about 18 months ago for his own Hero World Challenge, I asked him a couple of questions in the press conference. I was sitting down to write my story, and I read about six words on the screen. I kind of feel this somebody sort of breathing down my neck, and I turn around. It's Tiger. He's got a big smile on his face, and he looks at me and said, "Don't blank it up."
Yeah.
Tiger of 10 years ago would never have done. He would have walked way out of his way just so he didn't have to go through the media center and see us writers. And now he doesn't mind doing that. He accepted an award, the Ben Hogan Award from the Golf Writers Association of America last night, and for perseverance and coming back from injury. And he was very, very contrite. He was very open, very honest in his speech, and he did a really good job with that. So, I think this is just sort of his personality now, whether it's the fact that his private life has gone through the ringer and, he just kind of feels like he needs to be sort of more likable, whether it's just being a dad and, you know, kind of understanding that, or maybe it's just maturing. It may be just, I'm the same age as Tiger, and I'd like to think that I'm more mature than I was 10 years ago. And,
yep.
Maybe he's just kind of matured into sort of a nicer guy to be around.
Yeah, well said. Perspective will make better people of all of us, provided you allow it to and you embrace it and you're aware of the changes. The one thing we have to still work on, Tiger, is still a little tight with the old tips I'm hearing in terms of the leaving. Right, Jay? He's still a little tight leaving tips or what?
I don't know. I've never done anything for him to give me a tip, so I wouldn't know from personal experience.
I hear you. That's the word on the street. I was watching this morning. It has been for like 20 years. I was watching this morning from our home before I got in my car to come to work, and I always love, as you do, deep appreciation for the ceremonial first tee shots. You know, Gary Player's 83. He looks like he's 60. Jack Nicklaus is 79, and the legend. Gary, I feel like I know so much about Jack, and I know what Gary means to the golf community internationally, but can you share something? Like, I still feel like there's a relative unknown, because I didn't grow up watching golf. I didn't grow up, you know, loving golf. I'm in my 40s. I'd say the last 15 years, I have really, truly fallen in love with the history, educated myself. I play, not well, but I play. But the Black Knight is still a little bit of a mystery to me. Can you give me something about him that I missed along the way? Why is he so special?
He's probably one of the game's all-time great, or not probably, he is one of the game's all-time great international players. And I don't just mean the fact that he's from South Africa. I just mean he traveled everywhere. He traveled the globe. He would play in Europe. He would play in America. He would play all over the globe. And I've spoken with Gary, with Mr. Player. I can't call him Gary.
Sure, sure.
So many times over the years. And he is fervent in the assessment that he has flown more miles around the globe than anybody else who is living today. I don't know that there's any way to quantify that. I don't know if there's any way to try to figure that out, because I'm sure he wasn't keeping track back in the 50s and 60s when he started flying around all over the place globally to play all these events. But it just goes to show you that it really is. I think he helped sort of make the world a little smaller in golf, and he helped bridge that gap between the continents and made it a global game. So he deserves a ton of credit. I know, obviously, Jack is an absolute legend. In my mind, he's the GOAT until and if the time that Tiger Woods has 18 major championships. Arnold Palmer deserves so much credit for bringing the game to the masses. So does Tiger, of course, in his own way in this generation. But Gary Player should not be overlooked for everything he's done for the game as well.
Jason Sobel, Action Network senior golf writer now. And I notice you say Mr. Player, but you say Jack. You don't call Jack Mr. Nicholas to his face?
You know, I have. For whatever reason, Jack is kind of Jack. It was always Mr. Palmer, which he hated. And I spent time around him, too. And as soon as I'm going to walk up to him, go, hey, Mr. Palmer, he's face would kind of drop a little bit, like, hey, how you doing? He wanted guys going, hey, you old, whatever, and just making fun of him, and he loved that. He loved the little give and take and, you know, kind of making fun of people a little bit. So, I think he always kind of flinched at Mr. Palmer, but I couldn't bring myself to call him anything else.
I miss seeing him. We all do. We all miss him. We're going to always miss him. Man of the people. All right, a pop quiz before you go. Are you ready for this, Jay?
Let's do it.
Okay.
I'm ready.
I'm going to set this one hole. I'm going to give you, I got one, two, three, four, six different aspects of golf. Without expounding on the name, you can give me a couple of words, but I'm going to give you five different scenarios, and I want you to tell me the player in golf history you would want to hit that shot.
Oh, boy. Okay.
All right. You ready?
All right. Let's do it.
Tee shot, long par four. Who do you trust the most with the driver in the history of the game? Long and straight. Who are you going with?
Give me Greg Norman.
Greg Norman. Shark action. Okay.
Rory McIlroy is right there, but if everything's the same, if I can use the same equipment and things like that, obviously
sure.
Rory hits it a lot longer than Greg Norman ever did, but he's got different equipment. If you kind of compare the eras that way, Greg Norman's probably the greatest driver of the golf world.
I get it. No, and I like how you put that. That context is important. Trust me, I get that, but I'm happy you say that. Long iron to a par five that you probably, let's say that you have to shape it, either left to right or right to left, a shaped long iron to a par five. Who are you going with?
I have to go Hogan.
Ben Hogan?
You know,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And obviously, we're going back and again.
Yeah.
The context of, you know, he was hitting three irons and not the kind of distance that these guys would hit a nine iron for the same shot. But best ball striker of all time, I'm still a firm believer in.
Okay. Many people that know a lot more golf than I do would back up that claim, that assertion about Ben Hogan. Let's go with not quite a mid iron. Forget about the hybrids. Let's say a 7 or an 8 iron into a green. You got to be in Birdieville. It's got to be dancing. It's got to be hitting the stick. Who are you going with?
Give me Phil.
Phil. Phil.
You know what? No. Give me Tiger. Give me Tiger.
Ooh.
I can pick Phil off.
Ooh.
Give me Tiger.
Okay.
Tiger, for all of the greatness that Tiger has achieved over the years, we almost like we would always during his prime talk about the great ball strikers in the game and say, oh, you know, Sergio's a really good ball striker. Adam Scott's a really good ball striker. We'd almost leave out Tiger because he does everything else so well also. And he's the greatest ball striker of all time. I mean, up there with Hogan, who I just talked about. But, yeah, give me Tiger for that.
You don't have to sell me too hard. I have no problem with the Tiger on any answer. I got three more for you. A greenside bunker shot, and obviously you got to dance it near the pin. You got to get down for a birdie to win. Who's your bunker guy?
I was hoping you were giving me that one.
I got you. Yelled
very close, but Seve's got to get the nod there.
Seve Ballesteros.
The greatest short game artist ever.
Mr. Creativity. Saw things nobody else saw, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And you could do that. You give him a one iron in that bunker, he'd still get it up and down.
Oh, that is good. That is well said right there. A 40-foot putt Not to drain it. I mean, if it goes in, it's a bonus. It's you want great leg. You want to walk up and tap that in with your big toe. So you want to get down into guaranteed 40-footer. Maybe a little bend. Maybe a little pace. Who's that guy?
It's some. It's between like a Bobby Locke and Bobby Brad Locke. Saxon's a terrific putter in his day. I'm going to go though with. With Ben Crenshaw.
Crenshaw.
I really thought was one of the best putters of all time. And, you know, I mean, you could really say Tiger. You could say Jack for any of
exactly.
these. And you'd be – so I'm probably stretching with guys who, well, he wasn't that great in the rest of his game, which really made the putting stand out more, if that
mm-hmm.
makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Tiger's great at everything. So, yes, Tiger can putt, and maybe he's a better putter over his career than Crenshaw, but he also does everything so much better that that kind of gets left by the wayside, if that makes some sense.
It makes total sense, and I thought you might say, Ben, I have to plead ignorance. I honestly don't know much about Bobby Locke. What decade? When did he play?
We're talking about like the 40s and 50s. Bobby Locke was a
don't know much
South
about
African
him.
Who he was just, and again, I'm going by stories.
I got you.
I wasn't around. There's not too much video, but
sure.
All the stories that he was back then the best. But of course, the greens were rolling a 7 or 8.
At that point. Exactly.
A 14 or 15 like they are today.
They weren't quite concrete back then. All right, 10 seconds, and then we got to bounce. This has been awesome. I hope you guys have enjoyed this interview. Jason's doing a great job. 7-footer, must have, must make it. 7-footer for the win for a major. Who's getting that short stick? Who are you going with?
I've always said, see, you phrase it a little differently. Whenever you say a 7-footer for your life, I always say me because no one else would care enough to actually read it and make that putt for me. But if it's for a major, it's got to be Tiger.
Tiger.
Jack's right up there too, but give me Tiger to make that putt.
Jason, this was really good. We're going to get you back on for sure. I've been a fan of your work for a long time, but for my audience that you know maybe just read you and hasn't heard you on the radio, I think they're saying the same thing. This was fantastic. Great job, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Thanks. I appreciate you having me on. That was fun. That
yeah.
was way more fun. I've done a million of these this week. That was the most fun one all week. So
that's
it.
What we do here on Tiki and Tierney, Jay. I appreciate that, buddy. Go have some fun at Augusta. You got it, man.
Thanks, bud.
Yep, you got it. Well, that was pretty cool. Jason Sobel, Action Network Senior Golf Writer. Coming up, LeBron, CP3, Melo all showed up for D-Wade. And just watch Melo, and I had a sad thought. I'll tell you what it is coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. There it goes. Quick way to save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. So I was saying, I'm going to get to Dwayne Wade and a little bit of Dirk as well. But I was saying yesterday with Teague, who's obviously out today, you know, betting on golf is really hard. I've done it a few times. You know, maybe I'll pick an event where I'll look at like maybe final round matchups or Saturday matchups, and it might be player X versus player Y. And I've got a sense that, you know, player X is -110 or it's even or maybe somebody's +130 and I think they're playing better than the guy who's actually favored. That's actually a little bit of fun. Like when you can actually find two players within the same round, maybe throw a few bucks on that. I did something a little different this year for the Masters. Who knows if it's going to work. It's a small amount of money. But this might be my new favorite way to bet golf. D-Cell, check out what I did. I took 10 names last night, all right? And I went down and I found some wacky odds. Didn't bet Tiger, didn't bet Rory, didn't bet any of the big names, didn't bet anybody big.
These are 10 random names?
No, I mean,
researched a little bit.
A modicum of, enough to know what I'm putting my money behind, but also smart enough to know if a guy's +9,000, there's a reason why he's +9,000. So I, Cantley Woodland, who's actually playing pretty well. Ian Poulter, Ian Poulter, I know that's not coming out right. Snedeker, Hoffman, Matt Fitzpatrick, him I don't know. Matt Wallace, Brandon Grace, South African, who actually threw me a ball when I went to the practice round at Baltusrol a couple of summers ago for the PGA. Took my father-in-law, and then, of course, I was loud. As I could get, and
yo B,
yeah, yep.
What? I said you loud? No way.
Hey, it worked. I got a ball. Threw me a ball. Put a little something on him. Tyrell Hatton and Alex Noren, who is not, I believe he's a Swede. He's not playing well. Put $10 on each guy. All right. So $100 bet that you spread 10 different ways with varying odds, some as much or some as low, put quotes around that, a chance to win, you know, for $10, it'll win you $500. And others as high as, you know, $10 will win you $1,100 if the guy actually wins the Masters. So it's a little bit too early to really start diving in and seeing who's going to make the cut. And but a couple of guys I picked are hanging around. Woodland's one of them.
Now, does this change the way you watch the Masters?
No, no, because the money's immaterial. I mean, you don't bet real money, because if you do, you're an idiot. I mean, if you bet life-changing money, not, let me take that back. Not an idiot. If you bet life-changing money, I actually feel sorry for you. I truly do. If you have a little disposable income, you know, regardless of the sport, as I like to say, you like to get a little sweat as you watch a little something, and you can handle it, and you have your little man account, you know, separate from what's really important in life, you know, mortgage, school, cars, blah, blah, blah. Have a little fun. But that's a good way to spread out $100. 10 guys, they're not going to win. But if three of them enter moving day within the first page of leaderboard, in addition to watching Tiger, who you know is going to be there, and Phil's playing pretty well. I think this is Phil right here for the fairway. Yeah, Phil's minus one. He's on 13, par five, second shot. Amen corner. Nice tracer. Should be a golf announcer. A little bit long, and it finds the back bunker. Actually, just misses the back bunker. So I guess I wouldn't be good because I was wrong. That was a little low. So he's laying two. Not a great spot to be on that hole, and Phil's not happy. So that's a tough spot to be in. He'll par it. I don't know if he's going to birdie it. But Phil's playing well. But that's a good way to do it. I might have to start. And if I win,
If you win, that's going to be the new way that you bet the Masters.
I think it's going to be the new way that I bet every major from now on. Seriously. Because you know you're going to watch. I'm going to watch no matter what. And if you have a little additional incentive monetarily for a guy that for $10 would deliver almost a grand, I mean, that's betting is all about number one, staying in your lane. Number two, not falling prey to public sentiment, which is often wrong. And number three, getting value. I mean, that's really when you want to look for a good, you know, something to latch onto, it's not like, oh, give me the Warriors to win the championship. I don't know what the odds are, but if they're not even, they're pretty close to even, I would guess, something like that. It's almost not worth it, you know, because if they lose, you know, but you want to latch onto something where you're going to really, really pop. And last night, let me do this. I'll pick this back up after Axe update as well. We'll get to the blast. But last night, D-Wade and Dirk, different energy because Dirk, they're both on the road. Brooklyn was popping for D-Wade and San Antonio was popping for Dirk. Dirk was crying. D-Wade wasn't quite as emotional as Dirk. It was a little bit of a different energy. But his boys were there, LeBron, CP3, Carmelo Anthony as well. Yeah, I mean, and D-Wade, this is not a big deal, but it just annoys me about LeBron. D-Wade's doing the interview. Of course, LeBron's going to pop his head in the camera. You know, like, dude, it's Dwayne Wade's. And we know you boys. It's Dwayne's moment. Get out of here already. I mean, like, he's hovering. Did you see this, D-Cell? He's hovering behind, you know, again, not a huge deal. But he's just such a publicity hound, such a glory hound. Just let Dwayne Wade, just get out of the way. Get out. He's like this. He's like, trying to get his face in the cat. We know, LeBron, we know. And if we don't know, you'll tell us on Instagram. We know.
It felt forced almost. I felt awkward for Dwayne. Like, I know they're boys, I know they're friends, but.
I didn't get that. What do you mean?
It just felt like you're saying, like, it's Dwayne's night. And to have Melo, to have CP3, LeBron, I don't know. I felt like it took away from the night a little bit.
Really?
I did. Yeah, it felt awkward to me.
Well, I think maybe, I mean, I certainly respect wouldn't say that your opinion is wrong. I would frame it this way, though, and maybe so a different thing to think about. You have to strip away the fame and the fortune of his friends. That's the problem. It's, you know, if you take, let me put it, say when I'm, you know, 60, whatever, I'm doing my last radio, I'm getting ready to retire. And obviously my family, you know, my family will be here, but a couple of my real close buddies, you know, guys who were in my wedding, my best friends, and they're on the other side. Remember when Mike and Mike did their last show on ESPN, their family was there, a couple of friends, like, that's just kind of what you do. You share the moment. It's tricky because CP3 and Carmelo and certainly LeBron are such massive individual brands and entities that it seems like it strips away from Dwayne Wade's glory, but there's friends. I mean, you have to realize that it's his buddies. It's not like three hangers-on who are trying to get rich off Dwayne Wade. It's literally three of his best friends in the whole world. So I think you're wrong. Now, I am going to say you're wrong.
I get that part of it, but did they need to be courtside?
What do you want to sit up in the rafters, in the upper decks with the cheap seat? Where are they going to sit?
They could have sat in a box.
Yeah, I guess they could have sat in a box.
Where they weren't on camera the whole night.
You don't think they would pan to them in the box? And look up there. Look who's hanging out in the box. You know, Dwayne Wade's buddies.
You're probably
the banana
right.
boat crew.
You're probably,
what's the difference?
It felt awkward to me.
I didn't see that at all. Really awkward. Huh. If there was any awkwardness, it was Carmelo. I mean, that's the one thing. You know, CP3's get ready to play in the playoffs. LeBron just got ditched by Magic. That wasn't a pretty look, but it's never going to be awkward. He's one of the best three players of all time. I mean, it is what it is. Carmelo, is where I'm going to give Carmelo a lot of credit, had to kill him to be there and to see Dwayne Wade get that. Not that he was jealous, but as he internalized his own career, as you invariably do when you go through, even if it's an experience for somebody else in the same craft, if you will, you can't help but think on some level yourself and about, you know, where you've been and maybe where you're going more directly. But Carmelo is just dot, dot, dot. It's like there's no finality. He didn't even have a home base to gravitate to. Like the Knicks said, get lost. The Thunder said, get lost. The Lakers said, we don't need you. The Rockets said, get lost. Where's he going? Back to Denver? Denver's good now. That's the problem. I mean, I'm not trying to take a cheap shot at Carmelo, but if Denver was bad, all right, maybe we're going to let sentiment win out. 10-day contracts, little gusto with glory. The great Carmelo Anthony. Yay! Carmelo could have his moment. The Denver Nuggets are good. You want to be around that, maybe, you know, having to play. So that was a little awkward. The other stuff, I didn't get a sense of that. 1-855-212-4227. Tiki and Tierney Show. We'll get to the blast coming up. Some final thoughts on the Masters. Time for some calls if you wanted to jump in. Axe update is right now. Here's Rich.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Tonight at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, pick up the sticks with CBS Sports Network as number 2 Loyola Maryland faces off against Georgetown Hoyas. It's college lacrosse on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports, CBS Sports Network. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, Channel 206. So, these, I was looking at some of these names that I just, you know, that I ran through before, these random bets, right? I have Woodland, he's -2. I've got Cameron Smith, he's -2. Poulter's -2. Snedeker's bombing out, he's +3. Hoffman is -1, he's in the mix. Fitzpatrick's +4, forget about him. Tyrell Hatton +1. Within punching distance here. So there's a pretty good Kisner -3.
I mean, after day one, you seem like you're in pretty good position.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to think if you make a bet like that and you take 10 long shots to win and with round one just about over, to have a little more than half on the first page of the leaderboard.
That's a solid day.
You take that any day of the week. You really would. All right, let's blast away. Here we go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, here we go, BT.
Okay, buddy.
The Giants agree to a 4-year, $41 million contract with wide receiver Sterling Shepard. Wise investment?
I'm okay with it. I like Sterling. Sterling played pretty well when Odell Beckham Jr. was out. I guess what I question is the tactics. I think they're deploying the same player. Why would you get Golden Tate? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Golden Tate kind of plays the same game, though I think at this point Sterling Shepard's better, a little more wiggle, but they're both operating out of the slot. Listen, to pay Odell all that money, and then try to build the interior lines, not just offensive, but defensive, you know, to kind of rebuild the secondary. I mean, they got a lot of work in front of them. So Sterling Shepard is good. When you have Saquon, who was great, and now you could direct some other equity in the draft and some other financial means at players you really need and holes that you need to fix, it makes sense. I like Sterling Shepard. He's good.
Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella said it was a little smelly last night in the media room during his post-game presser after the Jackets beat the Lightning.
I'll tell you right now, this room smells of B.O., I'll tell you.
Jeez.
My gosh.
My gosh.
Before, no, it's not me. It's not me. I walked into it here, and so does that end this thing here? Okay, thank you.
You've been in these media rooms and locker rooms.
Yep.
How bad can they get?
NBA locker rooms are actually pretty good. I mean, they're pretty good. Baseball gets a little grimy because you got, I mean, I don't want to get the scale. You got, you know, 25 guys and 25 jock straps and sanitary socks and, you know, now all the ball players, basketball too, but the ball players, baseball wear like the tight, like that ply, what is that called? Like the dry fit stuff. And so you have that underneath the actual uniform. That get a little pasty. Hockey's disgusting. Hockey is absolutely, it's repugnant. It's just, it's absolutely gross. In terms of the media rooms, I mean, you know, not everybody's hygiene is terrific, but for the most part, the media rooms are fine. The hockey locker room is a death trap. I mean, you go in there, you might not emerge. You might not come out. It's bad.
The Sacramento Kings have fired head coach Dave Yeager. Surprised by this move?
A little bit. I know that Vladi Divac, is making a bit of a power play here. Now, they were better this year. They plateaued a little bit in the middle of the season after, you know, showing some real promise for the better part of the first 30, 40 games, whatever it may have been. Yeager had a year to go on his contract, so a little surprise there. But you start to get in that situation a year to go. Okay, rubber's going to hit the road. We either extend or we say peace out and we move on. I want to see who they bring in. If they bring in somebody that's really respected with that young core, I'll say it makes sense. Do I believe that Yeager deserved to get fired? No, I don't think he deserved to get fired. But I need to see the next person to really fully evaluate if it could be the right move, even though I think he was unfairly fired.
The NBA set a record this season with 760 sellouts.
Wow.
Is the NBA healthier now than it's ever been?
Oh, boy, that encompasses so many. Talk about a wide-ranging question. First of all, I did not know that until you read that about the sellouts. That's awesome. So, yeah, I mean, first of all, reacting to that, I mean, you'd be an idiot if you say, no, it's not healthy, because you would be ignoring the evidence that speaks to the contrary. What's happening, though, here's what's interesting. Some markets that have been suppressed for a little bit are beginning to rise, and not just rise like in increments, but rise like Milwaukee, new arena, boom. And that's part of the sellout aspect there. Plus, they're really good. Bad teams like the Knicks always sell out. The Lakers were bad. Lakers always sell out. The Brooklyn Nets have some energy. The Magic are on the come. They've been down for a little bit. 76ers are popping. Toronto's great. Celtics are always there. And look at the West. Warriors are going to pack the house forever. Denver Nuggets fans are re-energized. Portland's a great fan base. Rockets fans always show up. Same with Utah. Same with OKC. Same with the Spurs. And then you have some teams that have been really bad, like the Kings, showing some energy. So, yeah, it's healthy. And wait till the Knicks get both of those guys. Then it's really going to be healthy. For me, it's going to be healthy. For the show, it's going to be healthy.
Be very healthy.
And forward for the Knicks, Kevin Durant.
All right, last one. The St. Louis Cardinals signed Matt Carpenter to a 2-year, $37 million deal.
Yep.
Is Carpenter worth the money?
You know what's funny about Matt Carpenter? You don't really associate this vision with baseball because you don't really play pickup baseball as a kid. I mean, in the street, you might grab the bat, you play the game, you know, who's going to hit first, last licks, all that stuff. But in the park, when you're playing hoops, it's easy to identify the ballers. You can kind of take a look at somebody. This guy can play. Or reputation precedes them. You can tell the players who are gangly and maybe can't shoot, can't handle, not coordinated. Baseball's tough. You just don't know. I mean, look at a guy like Hunter Pence, who has the most unorthodox swing in all the baseball. He's been a good player. I say this because if there were, like, the pickup dynamics in baseball that you have in hoops, Matt Carpenter might be one of the last people that you pick. You know, I don't think he even wears batting gloves. He's not powerful at all. He's got strong wrists, clearly. Doesn't look imposing, but he's got quick twitch muscles. He keeps the bat in the zone a long time. He gets great leg. Matt Carpenter's a really good player. So, 2 for $37, I actually think it's kind of a steal. Yeah, I like him.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
You know, here's the other thing with a team like the Cardinals. If the Cardinals do it, it's usually right. And just think about it. Really, what have they done so wrong? Even somebody like Albert Pujols, who was a franchise gem, and, you know, on this trajectory at that point, he's eclipsed him obviously since, but, you know, this benchmark trajectory where he would put himself in rarefied, iconic air, you know, the 3,000 hits, the 500 bombs, the 600 bombs, flirt with 2,000 ribbies. They said, I said this a long time ago when he was still, I want to say he was maybe 31. It's like he was 36, and the Cardinals said, no, we're not going to sign you. Cardinals have great instincts when it comes to players. I'm trying, how old is Matt Corbin? I want to see how old he is. Yeah, that's funny, too, because I'm looking up his stats. He's 6'3", 205. You would not get that from TV. You know, you would think that he looks more like 6'1", 187-ish. 6'3", 205, obviously a little bit deceiving, but he's been around a long time. He's played a couple of All-Star games. I like him. I've always liked him. Not off to a good start this year, and he's not a big average hitter, but he seems to hit timely home runs. He's generally a guy that's going to play upwards of 150 games. He's a grinder, good clubhouse guy. Yeah, I think it's a good signing. I do. I really do. All right, D-Sil, you have a golf question.
I do. I have we talked about earlier how Tiger probably wants a couple shots back today, finishing minus two, but probably could have been more like minus four. Maybe.
Could have been, yeah. He only, just so people know where you're coming from, if they just picked up the show, he birdied two of the four par fives. You'd like to get at least three, and he bogeyed 17. Go ahead, D-Sil.
How much throughout the weekend, Thursday to Friday, Saturdays to Sunday, how much does that approach change? Whether he's minus two after day one, minus four after day two, how would I know if his approach is changing?
In terms of strategy?
Correct.
Okay, that's a great question. It's a smart question. And you yourself said early in the show when we talked about this, you don't really understand the nuance of golf, and it's tricky. And, it's funny because, like, when I watch golf and I hear announcers say, well, he could just coast, you know, just play par, you know, fairways and greens. And I'm saying to myself, geez, I mean, that feels like the hardest thing in the world to do, to just hit fairways and hit greens. I'd give a body part to be able to consistently hit fairways and greens. But when you're at that level, and depending upon, specific to your question, where you are on the leaderboard, and also more directly, who's in front of you. Because just like in radio, you know, without naming names, we have a sense of, you know, who we think is good on the air and who we think is not. And quite frankly, they know. They know that, you know, if they look at the leaderboard, they're like, all right, this guy doesn't know how to win. This guy doesn't know how to close. This guy's 30 yards shorter than me off the tee. This guy's going to fold under pressure. This guy can't putt. And when they start moving the sticks around on Saturday and Sunday, they know. So I think, you know, for somebody like Tiger, I don't think that it affects his approach at the outset tomorrow. I think what it does do is it pisses him off a bit, because when he walks off the 18th green, I know he was cordial and smiling with my buddy Rinaldi in the post-round interview. But he knows he's going to get to his car with LaCava, and he's going to say, I should be sitting minus four, minus five. I should be leading. But it won't change, I don't think, the way he plays the first few holes. No.
So day one and two, is Tiger just concerned about Tiger, and then he'll start looking at everybody else?
I think it's another good question. He's not walking up the seventh fairway on Thursday saying, all right, what was that roar? Who got a birdie? You don't even react to that. It's almost benign. It's white noise. You don't even concern yourself with that. When you're a world-class player, not somebody who's just trying to win for the first time, when you're a world-class winner, and this, I guess, applies to tennis, like an individual sport, even race car, I would imagine, driving, NASCAR, you are more concerned with your feel early in the event, because you know if you're dialed in, if your numbers are on point and, you know, you just, the ball feels right and the course fits your eye, you know that if you play your game, no matter what happens with the other guys, you're going to be there on Sunday. Now, great question, but it will change as you get deeper into the weekend. You might have to go for birds. You might have to go for pins. You go for pins, you make mistakes, or you get rewarded. You're not doing that on Thursday or Friday. And now if you have to make the cut, you would. But other than that, no. Attaboy, D-Sil. We will transform you yet. All right, see you tomorrow. Have a great Thursday night. Peace. Got to go.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.